Okay, we come to the last topic of the canonical fringe, the books around the edges.
Mm-hmm.
Can you describe Eusebius' fourfold division and how it helps us understand the core and the edge of the canon?
Yeah, in order to understand sort of the state of the canon in early Christianity, Eusebius, 4th century church historian, really proves to be helpful. He has a whole lengthy discussion on canon and actually lays out sort of four categories of books in his time. And I found his category breakdown really helpful because it helps dispel a number of different sort of myths and misunderstandings about the canon. And here's the four. First is what you might call the accepted books or the received books. These are the sort of ones that have been well-known, well-documented from the very start. No one really doubts them. And this is basically 21 out of the 27 are in that category. And then he has a second category, what are called the disputed books. When he calls them disputed books, he just means that these have been doubted by some. There's been some controversy about these books. It doesn't mean they're not canonical. From what we can tell about Eusebius, the disputed books ultimately proved to be canonical, but they did have a rocky road into the canon. And those are going to be the remaining five or six books, such as 2 Peter, James, Jude, 2 and 3 John, and so on. So when you take the accepted books and the disputed books and you put them together, you end up with 27 books exactly. And what's interesting about those first two categories is actually confirm the historical evidence we've talked about earlier, which is that there was a core and then there was a periphery. And Eusebius seems to acknowledge that same thing. There was a core, no one really doubted these, and there was a periphery that took some time for the dust to settle. And then there's a third category of books for Eusebius called rejected books. Now, that sounds a little harsh to us. We think rejected, well, he must have hated those books. No, what rejected books mean is rejected as it pertains to their canonical status, not rejected in terms of their usefulness. In the category of rejected books would fall books like The Shepherd of Hermas, which Eusebius would have liked and found it orthodox and positive and useful, not canon, but useful and helpful. So rejected as it pertains to canon, but still beneficial. And then the fourth category would be heretical books. And heretical books would, of course, have been books that have doctrine that would deem to be highly problematic, probably a forgery. And he has a number of books that fall into that camp. I think the Gospel of Peter is in there, amongst others that would have been deemed highly problematic and certainly worthy of full condemnation. Now, when you look at those four categories in a whole, they just remind us of a number of important truths. First of all, the first two categories, again, show you the core and non-core, that principle. But then there's this category of orthodox but not canonical, which we talked about earlier, which is really helpful to realize that Christians in the early centuries used lots of books as beneficial but didn't necessarily put them in the canon. And then the last category is helpful too because it tells us that when it came to some books, the church fathers were relentless in their condemnation of it. They weren't at all sort of undecided about those books. They found them unworthy of any reading at all in the church and were quite willing to call them heretical. So that fourfold structure, I think, can still guide us today when we think about books. There's the core, there's the books that took a while to get in, both are canon, there's orthodox ones, and there's heretical ones. I think that structure is important for any understanding of early Christianity.
Could you go through the few disputed books and share with us why there may have been some question
in
some people's minds about them?
Yeah, so the disputed books, as I said, are going to be books like 2 Peter, Jude, James, 2 and 3 John, and even Revelation, and I'll say a word about that too. It's a bit hard to know exactly the reason for the dispute in every case. I think one observation that many scholars have made, which I think is actually very helpful, is that you'll notice that most of the disputed books are all very small. They're just very tiny books. In fact, 2 and 3 John are extremely tiny. Jude is extremely tiny. Why would tiny books be more subject to dispute? And I think the answer is simply because they were used so much more infrequently. I tell people all the time, when's the last time you heard a sermon series on Jude? When's the last time you read 3 John? Answer is probably hardly ever. Now, of course, you don't think, therefore, they're not scripture. But in the early church, you have to realize, as things were being spread around and as the canon was being recognized, the books that were used less often were just simply subject to more doubt. People were like, well, I hadn't heard about that book. I've never read that book. I didn't know that book existed. And so you realize that part of the reason for dispute is just practical. They're just small. Small books get used less, and because they get used less, they're disputed more readily. So I think that's a factor. There's probably other factors in play. 2 Peter was under dispute because it was thought by some to be a forgery. it proved not to be, in the mind of the church at least. But we know there was a good bit of Petrine forgery going on in the second century and later. Gospel of Peter, Apocalypse of Peter, Preaching of Peter, the Acts of Peter. There's a whole litany of apocryphal works associated with Peter. So when 2 Peter comes along, you can see some groups might have thought, let me be extra cautious. Not sure quite yet whether that's authentic. And then I'll say a word about Revelation. Revelation is its own unique creature when it comes to what we call a disputed book. I don't even know if I like putting Revelation in the disputed category, because one of the things that makes Revelation unique is it actually has the opposite pattern that most of the disputed books have. In the standard disputed books, their reception starts off very slow, very hit and miss and intermittent, and then only gradually over time does it reach a consensus. Revelation is very different. It starts off rapidly as very widely recognized and received as apostolic and genuine. Boom, bursts on the scene. People love it, they know it, they use it. And then it's actually in the third century that it takes a tumble. We know of Dionysius of Alexandria, who questioned it and thought it was maybe the product of the heretic Cerinthus, and people sort of had a panic attack about Revelation. And then by the fourth century, it started pulling out of the dive and ended up being back on its feet again. So Revelation is its own thing, but there's another example of doubts about authorship that can sometimes derail a book. But I think when the dust settled, that tells you something. When the dust settled, the church said, look, after all it's been through, we now recognize that it's fully authentic.
I do want to have a follow-up question.
Yeah.
And that is, what's remarkable to me is there wasn't really that much being questioned.
No, it's kind of shocking. In fact, I tell my students regularly that if you think of something like the four Gospels, which is typically the thing they say is questioned all the time, there really was never any dispute over the four Gospels, meaningfully. Of course, you have someone saying something about the Gospel of John, the Hippolytus issue with the Gospel of John, which is not even clear whether it was really Hippolytus. But you've got a very deep and widespread consensus on the Gospels, so much so that I think if you were to go up to someone in the second century and say, so why'd you all choose Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John? I think they would have just looked at you like you were asking a nonsensical question. They'd have been like, what do you mean choose? Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John? We didn't choose Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. The books that were always there. They were handed down to us from the beginning. So I think what you find in the early church is that for the core of the canon, it was actually just pretty much there from the start.